Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Generation Y ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible. Starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
There are days like today where I am just too busy to get outside and go feed myself. And that's where DoorDash comes in. It's super convenient and they bring the food to me. Also, I don't like paying delivery fees. So I have DashPass. DashPass is an exclusive membership from DoorDash that gets you unlimited $0 delivery fees on eligible orders and members-only deals and discounts, all for only $9.99 a month. DashPass actually pays for itself in two orders on average. DashPass makes it easy to save at restaurants, grocery stores, and all your local favorites. Open the door to $0 delivery fees and savings you can't get anywhere else. Sign up for DashPass today only on DoorDash and get your first 30 days free if you're a new member. Subject to change, terms apply.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia of being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
This episode is brought to you by June's Journey. Unleash your inner sleuth and step into the glamorous 1920s. Uncover scandalous family secrets and solve the mysterious murder of June Parker's sister. With dazzling hidden object scenes and riveting storylines in each chapter, June's Journey invites you to a thrilling era of mystery and romance. And now, June needs your help, detective. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. Your adventure awaits.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, 15% off your first order with code WONDERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
How you doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm doing fine. Justin, how are you?
I am doing okay. I'm a little nervous. I'm about to watch my debut on A Crime to Remember.
Well, did you watch the preview they put out?
Yeah, and they did a fantastic job because I'll tell you what, I was a nervous wreck when I was in that studio, so I look pretty good, I think.
Yes, you did.
We have new Patreon episodes out. So check those out. And if you don't want to subscribe to us on Patreon, it's cool. We have our premium episodes out on our website, genyshop.com. We also have them out on iTunes for all the Apple users out there.
Yeah, they're in the iTunes music store. So don't go where you get your podcasts. You have to actually go to the music store and search for Generation Y there. Actually, I've had the most luck just searching for one of our past episodes. So try looking up Kelly Thomas or Josephine County.
Or Silk Road. We're doing CrimeCon this year, and it's going to be awesome. You should buy tickets. What code should they use?
Gen Y, G-E-N-W-H-Y.
And if you buy a ticket and you use the code Gen Y, then we get credit. And then, like, I don't know.
The world's a happier place.
Yes. LA meetup.
Idle hour.
March
24th.
Yeah. Saturday, March 24th. Check out our Facebook page because I don't remember the time. Tonight's case, I've heard a lot of other journalists and spokespeople talk about this case. It happened in Atlanta, Georgia, September 25th, 2016. And we have another husband who is accused of murdering his wife. But this case isn't quite as simple as that. So what are we talking about tonight, Aaron?
Tonight is the case of Claude Tex McIver. We'll just call him Tex. He was driving home one night with his wife, although they had a friend actually behind the wheel named Danny Joe. Somewhere along the way on their journey back home, they have to get off the highway. Is that right?
Yeah, there's a Atlanta actually has probably, it's probably up in the top five worst traffic cities in America. I think LA is still number one. Then you got New York and San Francisco, and sprinkle Atlanta in there somewhere. So they need to get off the highway. It's just a parking lot, which I totally get. And they take a side street that's in sort of the downtown area under an overpass that has a lot of homeless, and it's more poverty stricken down there.
Well, Tex gets nervous and retrieves a gun. I guess he's worried about the safety of himself and his wife and their friend.
So he asks his wife, "Hey, can you get my gun out of the console?" And she pulls out this bag with his 38 snub nose and hands it to him. According to Tex, he grabs the gun, and they had dinner earlier and they've been drinking a little bit. That's why their friend was driving, and he goes to sleep, and then he's jarred awake. Either they hit a bump or something happens and he's incoherent, and he pops awake and he pulls the trigger of the gun.
Doctors attempt to save Diane's life, but they are unsuccessful. So at the center of this case is a man who has shot his wife and she died. For some, this is a, you know, poor guy. He lost his wife in this terrible accident. But for others, he's a man who was trying to get rid of his wife and made it look like an accident.
Diane McIver was well-to-do growing up, but she was hungry to excel in life. Let's just put it that way. She got a job working for a man named Billy Corey, who started a convenience store chain and then went on to pretty much have a huge company. And Diane worked her way up from answering phones to pretty much becoming the president of the company. She becomes an attorney at Fish and Phillips. While working there, there is a man named Claude McIver. Claude, he's a prominent labor and employment law attorney for the firm. So he's the guy that when you sue your company for wrongful termination or whatever, he's the guy that shows up to the court on behalf of the company. Right there, a lot of people already don't like him. But he is enamored with Diane. He's trying to get her attention, but she's pretty standoffish, doesn't want to talk to him. They met when they moved into a villa at Buckland Heights on Kingsbury Road in Atlanta, Georgia. Tex actually slipped a note under her door welcoming her to the building,
Diane wasn't really into Tex, and her first marriage at age 40 had kind of dissolved into ruins. She wasn't really wanting to start anything new, but eventually Tex got one of her friends to sort of get them to bump into each other and talk again. So she agreed to go over to his apartment for dinner. Tex had actually been married before. His first marriage ended very poorly. Tex actually, in the divorce decree, wanted visitation rights to the dog and access to the hose in the yard to wash the dog off. So kind of gives you a whole level of control there. After dinner at his house, she seemed to like him. They started dating. Tex subleased his apartment and got another one that was right next to hers so they could be closer. And they eventually tore down the wall between the two and created a large condo. So they own these apartments, these condos. In 2005, Tex proposed and they were to be married. Diane's longtime friend, Danny Joe, helped him pick out the engagement ring. Tex, sparing no expense, will buy a $60,000 ring for Diane. Kind of tells you what kind of money they're making. Tex being a well-to-do lawyer and Diane being pretty much a CEO of a company. Their wedding was, the only word I can come up with is extravagant. She was put on a horse and carriage to be carted up to the altar. It was pretty much like royalty. He spares no expense here on his wife. In addition to their Atlanta condo, they ended up getting a 86-acre ranch in Putnam County, which is about 80 miles southeast of Atlanta. Tex had bought this back in the 80s. He had a private lake, guest house, and horses there. They had many parties, and it was their quiet country retreat. Tex even bought an adjacent property and built a house for his good friend there, Andrew Ward. It is said that the two were a very good match and spent a lot of time together and a lot of weekends at the ranch. So the MacGyvers and their friend Danny Joe are spending a lot of weekends at the ranch, and at the end of September, on a Sunday, Tex and Diane spend the day golfing while Danny Joe was horseback riding. Early in the evening, they will go out to dinner at the Longhorn Steakhouse, which is not where I would eat if I had that much money, with the vice president of Diane's company. While there, they drink a lot of wine, and Diane has had a few glasses, and Tex has had a glass, though later he would say that he only had a few sips. They decide that Danny Joe should be the designated driver, and they give her the keys to the Ford Explorer so they can drive back to Atlanta.
Now, according to Danny Joe, Tex falls asleep in the back seat, and he's seated right behind his wife. So they're traveling on I-20 West for about 25 minutes. As they're merging onto Highway 85, the road is pretty much a parking lot. So Danny Joe, you know, she doesn't want to park here on the highway. So she decides to exit at Edgewood Avenue, which is, it's really close to downtown Atlanta.
Now they get off on this exit. They're going under the overpass where, one, it's blocking out any of the light. It's kind of dark. And there's a pretty good homeless population that will camp out under the overpasses. Living in LA a lot of my life, that's just a thing. It gives them shelter, gives them, shade from the sun. So that's where they go. While they're driving through this area, Tex is not really into this. I think he actually says it's getting dark down here, and I'm not quite sure he was actually referencing the light source. He's feeling paranoid. He thinks that there might be people that want to carjack them. If you've ever been to a impoverished part of town, it can be a little scary, but they're people too.
Some of them just have had really bad luck in life and can't find a home. So Tex is not okay with this, and he's getting more and more agitated until he finally asks his wife, "Hey, get my gun out of the console." And she obliges.
Yeah, according to Danny Joe, before he asks for the gun, he says, "This is a bad idea, girls. This is a bad area." So like Justin said, he's not comfortable. And apparently having his gun will give him a sense of security.
So he has a .38 caliber Smith & Wesson revolver, and it's wrapped in a plastic bag. And so she hands it to him and puts it on his lap and I guess goes back to sleep. Although if I'm on high alert when there's if I think there's bad people around, I don't know if I'm going back to sleep, but whatever.
They're driving north on Piedmont Avenue and they get to an intersection and they stop. Diane and Danny Joe had been talking to each other when all of a sudden, according to Danny, she hears a boom. At first she thought they'd been hit by something, but then she says that she looks over and she sees Tex is putting the gun down. Tex says that he woke up as Danny Joe brought the car to a stop and said he was handling the gun, and that's when he realized it had gone off. So he seems just as surprised as she is.
Tex tells her to drive to Emory University Hospital. He says it's the closest one and just get there. So they're now in emergency mode driving over to the hospital.
But since it's not the closest one, this is a good question. Is he having them drive to this hospital because it's further away from this area and he doesn't want to admit that he doesn't want to go to a very local hospital there?
It's possible. You know, the people that think he's guilty will say he was choosing a hospital that's far away because it's not an inner city hospital. It's a nicer hospital, so he's not going to take his wife to a bad place, but they use this against him saying the hospital's further away. And in the last, I think it was like 2 years, the hospital had only seen 2 gunshot wounds. So somehow they kind of equate this to Tex knowing that this is a hospital that's further away and that they wouldn't be equipped to deal with his wife.
They get Diane to the hospital before 10:15 p.m. and she's briefly treated by the emergency room doctor. They noticed that she had 2 wounds, one in the front and one in the back. And they asked Diane where the gun had been. Diane is conscious. She's badly injured, but she's conscious. And Diane replied to her, "It was an accident." Now, she wasn't talking right away when she got into the emergency room, but she came to for a little bit. Her life was definitely in danger because of this gunshot wound.
So the bullet had passed through the passenger seat and passed through Diane. So entrance wound on her back, exit wound on the front, and it had hit her heart.
In the emergency room, they're seeing that her blood pressure is very, very low. It's barely detectable, and they're trying to give her a transfusion and they're intubating her. But then she said, "I'm gonna die." So Diane knows that she's not going to make it. She can feel it. 5 minutes later, she suffered a cardiac arrest and her chest was opened and her aorta was cross clamped to lessen her bleeding. She was rushed to the operating room. They were going to perform surgery to try and save her life, trying to stabilize her, but it wasn't working out. They wanted to transfer her to another hospital, which had a level 1 trauma center, but she wasn't going to make it there.
While at the hospital, Tex will tell one of his good friends, Steve Maples, about the accident. Steve also happens to be a lawyer, also happens to represent Tex. So he comes to the hospital and they're having a discussion. So it appears that Tex is already starting to architect his defense. Meanwhile, the police are looking into this because obviously a gun is involved. trying to backwards engineer what happened in that vehicle. The bullet hole is pretty close to the center of the chair, and it's pretty straightforward. Like, it almost appears that he was holding the gun to the back of the chair and fired it. But all they have to go on is Diane and Danny Joe's statements, which Danny Joe also says it was an accident. There's an autopsy done on Diane, and on September 26th, the medical examiner will determine that Diane died from a gunshot wound and declares it a homicide. Now, that sounds pretty bad, but it doesn't mean that she was murdered. It means that she was killed by a weapon. It means that she was killed by a bullet. This wasn't she fell down a cliff or she had a heart attack. It's an external factor killed her. So it gets the label homicide. In the weeks following the shooting, Tex maintains that her death was an accident and that he woke up and the gun just went off. When Diane's body was released, Tex asked another friend, Rachel Stiles, to oversee her cremation. Whenever he looked at the cremation papers, he would be overcome with emotion and cry, and it took him several days to finally sign off on it. Rachel went down and had to identify Diane's body and help Tex out with this whole process. Now, Detective Darren Smith, who was investigating the shooting, deemed it an accident. He wrote down that I determined that Claude MacIver was holding the gun in a careless and reckless manner, that if discharged would cause significant injury or death if anyone was directly in front of said gun. However, the DA would go on to conduct their own subsequent investigation, and they suspect Tex had ulterior motives and his actions. They just don't believe Tex's version of the story. Now, the cops and the investigators are calling this manslaughter, and that's the report they hand over to the DA.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles, and immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails, feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
Now, one thing that could not be determined was whether the gun had been cocked at the time or not. And let's talk about that real quick, because this is... when you're talking about firearms, there's double action and single action. And double action is when the gun is not cocked. If it's in that state, this 38 caliber gun requires 12 1/4 pounds of pressure to pull the trigger to fire the bullet.
And that's because the pulling of the trigger will cock and fire the weapon all in one motion. That's why it's double action, because it's doing two actions. Whereas a single action is when you just pull back the hammer, the weapon is cocked, and there is a much shorter trigger pull.
And that was determined to be about 2 1/4 pounds of pressure. That's the question, is if he had cocked the gun, then he could probably pull that in his sleep, right?
It would be easy to.
But Tex maintains that he was asleep when the gun went off, and that's what woke him. So he can't honestly say whether it was cocked or not, because he said he was asleep and he didn't know.
Who sleeps with a gun in their hand? This guy's a moron. But okay, yeah.
So it's on December 21st of 2016 that Tex is arrested, and they charge him with involuntary manslaughter and reckless conduct. What that says is the police are still going with this case as though Diane's death was an accident. But in April, prosecutors serve multiple subpoenas to look at Tex and Diane's financial records. They're going to look and see if there is a motivation here for him to murder his wife.
Well, like they should. You go and you look at the will, you look at life insurance policies. There's a lot of things that they could see. If they find that Tex had been sending emails out saying, "I hate my wife," or had just shifted the will and all the assets into his name right before the death, that would look very suspicious and give them a motive.
As a condition of his bond, Tex was told that he could no longer possess any guns.
And he owned a lot.
Well, he had a friend, Jane Calhoun, who lived next door, essentially, and she went through his apartment a number of times to get every gun that she could find out of there. So she's trying to help him out. And she finds how many guns?
She found 4 pistols in his closet, 1 in his dresser, and a long gun. There were guns stored in her closet and Diane's closet at the law firm. And then at the ranch, his friend and the sheriff of Putnam County, Howard Sills, retrieved about 35 guns from the ranch and stored them at, you know, took them to the evidence room. About 20 of them were lever action rifles and the rest were handguns. Of course, news media outlets will call this an arsenal of weapons, which I don't know. It's a lot of guns. He's a collector and he's very much into guns. If you were to ask me how many guns either one of my uncles own, they would put this guy to shame. They own a lot more than he does. I don't myself. I only have a few. But yeah, there's a lot of guns here.
As I mentioned, as part of his bond, he wasn't allowed to have any guns. They also were looking into the financial records to see if there was a possible motivation for him to kill his wife. Because his friend had supposedly removed all the guns, when they end up going back to his apartment to look for a hidden will, because at this point there were rumors that his wife had written a will and that he had hidden it because he didn't want it to take effect, which would of course back up this theory that he had murdered her on purpose or had planned to kill her at some point, because why hide a will, right? They go back on April 26, 2017 and do a search of his residence to try and find this hidden will. And investigators found a Glock in his sock drawer. So again, he's not supposed to have any firearms, and here they found one.
Now, he's posted bond, so he's out free. But then when they find this gun in his sock drawer, well, yeah, they're not too happy about that. And the judge will tell him to go back to jail.
Right. They remove any possibility for him to bond out again. The question is, did his friend just miss this gun, or did he get a gun and put it back at his residence?
Well, he claims that the gun was planted by friends of Diane or people that don't like him. There's a whole conspiracy here, Aaron. The gun's been planted just because whoever planted it knew the cops were coming back to search his condo, and they obviously would find this gun and he would go back to jail.
People had said that he was very, very upset when all of his guns needed to be removed from the residence.
Well, yeah, he needs defense, man.
He wants to say it's a conspiracy, but on the other hand, he was really upset about his guns being taken away. It makes sense to me that he would want to go and get one of his guns back.
I see this going one of two ways. Either A, he intentionally held one back, or B, maybe he forgot about it, but if it's his sock drawer, I would assume that he's going to that drawer every day unless he's a dirty guy.
His friend went through the residence and tried to retrieve every gun. I could see him, you know, because when they took these guns away, they stored them at an office. They stored them here or there, and he knew where they were being kept. So I could see him going and retrieving the gun. It's just too bad we don't have any testimony from anyone saying, yes, I took that gun from the residence. It wasn't there. And then, so when you found it again, obviously someone put it back there. That doesn't answer the question of whether he did it or not, but I still get the feeling that he put the gun there. After all, before he shot his wife, his go-to was to get his gun when he felt unsafe. And now, he's probably feeling pretty vulnerable. So this second will, the reason why this came about was a friend of Diane's named Rachel Stiles, who worked for Diane, said she had helped her out. She had copied some personal papers for her. She had given her the copies and originals back. And Diane said to her, thank you. This is my new will. So this is in 2015. Okay. And the first will she had created was in 2006. But in 2015, this is when Rachel Stiles is copying some things for her and handing them back over. And Diane tells her, this is my new will. So it's not based on a rumor, really. This is someone giving a statement and saying, she told me this was a new will. In essence, it's an updated will. So this could be possible motive for a murder. So, of course, the police issued a search warrant for Tex's condo and his office and the home of his estate planning attorney, Harold Hudson. And that's because in an email that recapped a meeting between Hudson and the McIvers, there was information about a new will for Diane that would give Tex the ranch, condo, and its contents if he predeceased her. All of this would go to a trust for their godson, Austin Schwall. Austin was not born yet when the 2006 will was created, so that makes sense that Diane made up a new will. She thought a lot of her godson and she wanted him to be taken care of. According to Hudson, Tex and Diane had a bit of a disagreement over this, but it was just a disagreement. It was a conversation to him. He didn't feel it was that heated. It was just these two people were working out how to do a will. And I'm sure no will is easy.
From jail, Tex will call his friend who works in the same building as the judge, Judge Robert McBurney, and he will ask her, hey, the defense is dragging their feet. I need to get out of here. Can you just get a signature? Can you make something happen here? So he's essentially asking another lawyer to talk to a judge to release him on bond again. This very much upsets people and the prosecution. He's calling from jail. So the call's recorded and it sounds really bad. It sounds like he's trying to influence the trial. He's trying to influence the judges. He's trying to make things happen through back channels. If he was anyone else, they wouldn't have this privilege. They wouldn't have this leverage. Only he does because all his friends are lawyers because he's a lawyer. He's got friends in high places. I don't really see this as a horrible thing against him as far as guilt goes. If I was sitting behind bars for months on end, I might try to back channel my way out of there too, but it does not look good for him. And it's just one more element that they're going to use against him. So their friend Danny Joe, who initially had said this was an accidental shooting, I guess borrowed money or was lent money by Diane. And after Diane's passing, Tex will ask Danny Joe for this money. He'll say, hey, when are you paying this back? Because I need the money. You know, obviously he's got some legal fees to consider here. And that's when Danny Joe's tone starts to change a little bit on saying whether or not this was an accident. She will talk about how Tex was telling her, hey, say you weren't in the car, say you weren't driving, which that seems kind of ridiculous to me, because if she wasn't in the car, who was driving? Where was Tex? Where was his wife? Like, it doesn't make sense for him to say that to her.
Well, it just goes to show that you can be a high-powered attorney and come across as very intelligent, but once you get desperate, well, maybe your logic goes out the window.
Or maybe he really didn't say it to her, and she's just now turning against him. You can see this going both ways. Meanwhile, Texas attorney Maples has put out a statement saying Tex was feeling paranoid in the car because of the Black Lives Matter protests going on in Atlanta, and he felt that he was in fear of his safety because of these protests going on. Tex will ask his lawyer friend to retract this statement. He will say that he never made that statement. His friend, who's doing a lot of his PR, will say, no, I'm not going to. That's what you said, so I'm doing that.
But when you think back to what we said earlier about what Danny Joe said and what he said and whether he told her not to talk anymore about the case, I mean, this isn't just one person saying that he said something and then said, no, don't say that anymore. Or I know you're trying to say what happened in the case, but don't talk. I mean, he's trying to manipulate people here, right?
And he'd actually called and left a message with Danny Joe saying, stop talking to the cops and delete this voice message after you listen to it.
See, that's manipulation.
It doesn't look good, but he is a lawyer, so maybe he knows what's going to happen. He knows how this is going to look, so he's trying to play damage control before there's even damage, and it's just making him look even worse. So here you have this really rich, well-to-do white guy saying he's paranoid because of either homeless people under this bridge or a Black Lives Matter movement. He's so paranoid that he pulls out a gun and accidentally shoots his wife. So he's trying to deflect any sort of accountability on himself to other people for his own actions. Meanwhile, he's telling Danny Joe and others involved, don't do this or don't say that. I didn't say that. And also, after the death of his wife, he knew he was going to need some money for legal fees. So he decided that he would sell off all of his wife's Louis Vuitton purses and dresses and jewelry in an auction.
And of course, this didn't sit well with people who love Diane and are watching him sell off all of her stuff.
Well, I mean, why would he need this stuff anymore, right?
Well, at the very least, it seems insensitive. And for a guy that has money, why does he need to sell all this stuff off?
Exactly.
I mean, what if family members wanted some of this stuff for sentimental reasons?
Exactly. And that's the problem, is it looks really bad because, oh, she's gone now, so I'm just going to start getting rid of all of her possessions. Even if he's not getting rid of all of her possessions, that's the way it comes across. And again, the guy's a moron. Another situation that happened with Tex to show, I guess, his hot-headedness, there were three teens that had pulled up into his cul-de-sac where he lived and were drinking and doing drugs or something, partying in their car, right, Aaron?
But it alarmed him because he could look outside and see them there, and he didn't like it. They didn't belong there. So he responds by sending two large dogs after these kids, and he fires his gun into the air and then at the vehicle as it goes by. So this isn't just scare them off. This is attack, because two of the bullets go through the rear left side of this Mustang GT.
Now, this wasn't just a quick altercation. He went out and yelled at them, got his dogs out to go after him, and then he opened fire. And he will claim that they were charging at him with their car, so it was self-defense, because, you know, it's always self-defense when somebody's driving away, and when you shoot at them, the bullets are entering the rear corner panel of the car or side of the car. That's not self-defense. They were not driving at him.
Yeah, the bullets would have went into the front of the vehicle at that point if they were driving at him.
So these guys are teenagers, and Tex, well, he's a lawyer. So when this altercation gets reported to law enforcement and goes through the process, these teenagers, they just want this situation over. They're already in trouble with their parents because they were out drinking and partying in the car. They shouldn't have been doing this. And then they get into an altercation with this older gentleman. So they just want the car and the damages paid for, which this is the deal that his lawyers will offer them instead of criminal charges.
Yeah, they settle out of court. And what does he write a check for? Like $2,000 or $3,000 at most?
Yeah.
That's getting off cheap for shooting at people.
Initially, he was charged with 3 counts of aggravated assault. I mean, this is technically it's attempted murder, but he gets 3 charges of aggravated assault bumped down to paying for a broken window. This is stupid. At this point, I think it's obvious that he is somewhat unstable and will rely on his guns to resolve a situation in an offensive manner.
Right. And I'm sure some people out there will say, well, this was one incident. It was in 1990, which was a full 16 years before or thereabout. So what does it have to do with the shooting death of his wife? Well, it may just be one incident, but keep in mind, he fired the gun at the vehicle. And something else was, when he was asked about this, he said that he just fired into the air to scare them off.
Yet 2 bullets entered the vehicle. So he lied. So his first statement is he chased them away without firing his gun. And then he says that he fired his gun into the air. But we know from the bullet holes in the vehicle that he was firing at them.
Remember what I said earlier about how he must be an intelligent man. He's a high-powered attorney. But really, some of the stuff that he's done, or some of the stuff that he's said even, it comes across as just extremely stupid. You can't claim to fire in the air and yet the bullets are going into the rear panel of the vehicle. It doesn't make any sense. And how does he have 2 people who were close friends of his telling him, no, wait, you can't tell me not to say this stuff? He's very manipulative. So already you can see that he's reckless, he's manipulative, and he's not past doing whatever it takes to try and get out of trouble.
That he keeps putting himself in. I mean, that's the thing, is all of these situations are what he's done himself. And if you don't hate him enough, here's one more thing that he did. After the Rodney King verdict that found the police officers not guilty, he put out a statement invoking Martin Luther King, praising the judgment for these police officers. I get if you agree with the judgment, but to actually invoke one of Black history's most influential civil rights leaders, especially Martin Luther King, in a situation like Rodney King, not exactly the best way to put things. So he lives in Atlanta. He's made comments about the Black population there and possibly comments about the Black Lives Matter movement. And you're seeing that he is pretty immune to caring about how he comes off talking about Rodney King. I guess this does show that he's definitely afraid of poor Black people.
So we gave some more background on why he could be just this reckless individual with a gun. But we also talked about how investigators were looking at the finances of the McIver couple. And what else did they discover?
Tex had borrowed or gotten a loan from Diane to the amount of $350,000 in 2012. The money was, it was going to a structure they were building together. It was a building on the ranch.
Yeah, it was a place where their guests could stay, I guess. The total cost of it was over $1 million, but Diane loaned him $350,000 through her business. She apparently did this because it would benefit them when it came to their taxes.
Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/genY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/genY. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Quince. Do you need to upgrade your wardrobe or home essentials at an unbeatable price? Well, Quince has you covered with timeless pieces that never go out of style, and you'll have them in your closet forever. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% off less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman, passes the savings on to you, and Quince only works with factories that are safe, ethical, with responsible manufacturing practices. Along with premium fabrics and finishes, how can you not love that? I recently got a duvet cover and a pair of awesome relaxed jeans. They're stretchy too. You can find all kinds of stuff at Quince. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/genY for free shipping on your first order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, Quince.com/genY to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/genY.
So, and I get that. You have, they both separate their money, but they both have their own businesses. They both have their own, they both do their taxes. And when you're doing that, you know, one business has to borrow money to pay for something. You have to move monies around. But he didn't pay his wife back at their agreed time. So Tex has taken $350,000, which to most of us, that's enough to be motivation to kill. He didn't want to pay her back. Law enforcement has handed over a manslaughter charge to the DA, but the DA takes that and says, you know what? We're going to upgrade this to a felony murder charge and unlawfully trying to influence a witness in the case. His trial was set for October 30th, 2017, but after the prosecution handed over a large amount of evidence to the defense, and the prosecution actually said, hey, we're going to go ahead and submit a continuance on behalf of the defense because we were very late in handing over a lot of this evidence. And I think it was thousands of emails that they had pulled from their computers and whatnot. So the defense has to go through all of this and scour through it. But meanwhile, the defense is sitting here thinking, why are you putting a continuance through on our behalf? It's kind of insulting to the defense team.
So as you might have guessed, this hasn't even gone to trial yet. I think at this point, we should make it clear as to why we chose this case. I wanted to talk about this case personally because there's a lot to talk about here. There's perception. There's this well-to-do lawyer who has a lot of money and a lot of connections. And whether you listen to the phone calls that were taped while he was being held, while he was in custody, or if you look at his behavior, if you listen to statements or read statements from friends of his who seem very upset with him because he seems to be trying to boss them around and tell them what they can and cannot say, or get them to retract statements that he may have said. You get this picture of a guy who not only seems to be pretty racist, but also will stop at nothing to try and get out of trouble. At the center of all this is the death of his beloved wife. And that's something that seems pretty obvious in reading through the history of this couple, is that he really seemed to love his wife, but did he have motivation to kill her? And when you look at his behavior, you look at how much money he has and how he is trying to exploit his connections, that's where it could completely influence your decision, your opinion on this case.
He looks like a scumbag. I have zero sympathy for this guy. He needs to keep his mouth shut. He needs to get over this fascination, this fantasy that he's some sort of hero with these guns. He makes himself look bad over and over again.
What happened, Justin?
All right, so this is probably where people are going to start going, what? Really, Justin? You really think that? But I actually think this was an accident. Before you freak out, let me at least paint the picture why. That day, their friend, Danny Joe, is behind the wheel. His wife's in the passenger seat, front passenger seat, and Tex is in the back. So Tex is not in control of this situation. He cannot have planned this situation. They drive onto the highway. The highway's backed up, and they get off on this one exit. Happens to be, as they say, a bad exit. He could not have predicted that. This is not within his realm of planning. He then asks for the gun because he's not feeling safe. And then he says he is jerked awake. Now, this is where I think he's lying. I don't think that the time that, you know, in between him asking for the weapon because he's scared of the people around the vehicle and then him falling asleep right away, like, that doesn't make any sense, right? Like,
well, and that could be why there are people that doubt that this was an accident, right? Because that would be him caught in a lie.
And I think he is caught in a lie here, because why would you go to sleep when you're on high alert with, oh, somebody might carjack us, give me my gun? He's not going to sleep. And there's not enough time that passes between the time he asks for the gun and then the shooting, I think, for him to just nod off. But they did have alcohol earlier in the day with dinner. Anyways, the shooting happened, and I think he was actually in the backseat dorking around with the gun. I think he is so, I don't know, enthralled, fantasizing about getting to shoot somebody, whatever it is, whatever his problem is with firearms, because he seems to be an offensive person, not a defensive person. I think if you're afraid that somebody might carjack you, you might just put the gun on the floorboard or put it on the seat next to you so it's within reach. I don't know anybody that takes a gun with their finger on the trigger and falls asleep with it. That's just negligent. That's just horrible. I think he was back there dorking around with the gun, and he shot it, because if it was a double action, that trigger squeeze is a long one. You don't just accidentally wake up from a slumber and pull that trigger all the way. So I think he was half pulling that trigger, spinning it around his hand, you know, doing some Doc Holliday thing. I don't know. But I think he accidentally pulled that trigger wide awake while he was in a paranoid state, and it was a negligent discharge. If you do any kind of studies or look at any research for negligent discharges, the saying amongst gun owners is there's two types of gun owner or two types of shooter out there. There are ones that have had a negligent discharge, and then there's ones that haven't had it yet. There was one study we read, took place over the course of a year, where they looked at 300 discharges, negligent discharges. 195 of them were injury only, and then 94 of them resulted in death. There's some funny numbers in there of people that were wounded and then later died from their wounds, but it's like one third. These things happen. If you go out to any gun site, if you go out to any YouTube channel, you will see firearm instructors shooting themselves while explaining gun safety. This stuff happens. And somebody like Tex, who makes a lot of bad decisions, as we've talked about, he, I think, is making another one. When it comes to these accidents, these negligent discharges, 41, 42% of the time, another person's killed. And then 49% of the time, the gun owner is injured or killed. So the lack of planning, the lack of control of the situation, oh, also the bullet hole being kind of in the center of the seat, I think he was pointing it and messing around with it. He didn't have control of the situation. He didn't have any sort of planning of the situation. If he actually wanted his wife dead, I think there would have been a far more, I don't know, thought out situation where he had more control and he could have done this in another way.
Yeah, when it comes to trying to figure out whether Tex MacIver murdered his wife or whether this was just a horrible accident, I just looked first for a motive. To be quite honest, he doesn't come off very well, but when it comes to motive, I believe that's on his side. I don't really see a motive. I know there's been a lot of talk about a supposed hidden will, that he wasn't happy about some of the decisions she wanted to make regarding the estate and where money would go. But when it comes down to it, I really don't see anything there myself. And then as Justin said, he wasn't driving. And it was the driver's choice, Danny Joe, to get off at that exit that took them into an area he didn't want to be in. He gets a gun out. He's nervous. This was unplanned. So when you put those things together, that there doesn't really seem to be a motive, and then there's this unplanned exit off the road they were on, right there, we're already in negligent territory, because obviously the gun was discharged, but again, there's no plan here. So I can't sit here and say, oh yeah, I think he wanted to kill his wife.
And the manslaughter charge that they had originally gone after him with carried a 10-year sentence. Even a gross negligent discharge could be a felony. Every state's different, but that can carry up to 10 years also. And even at 10 years, he's so old that people were calling this a death sentence. So not saying that it doesn't matter what they charge him with, but whether it's a murder charge or a manslaughter charge, the outcome's the same. He's going to die in prison.
Well, when it comes to the finding of the court, it's going to be important, because if he really didn't do this maliciously, it doesn't seem fair for him to die in prison over this. If he didn't mean to kill his wife, then he has the guilt of being the person who took her life.
This is true. I 100% agree that his life has already been pretty much destroyed. He's spent a lot of time in prison behind bars. But I feel that he and other gun owners need to be held accountable, because if it's, oh, it was just an accident, we're going to move on now, no charges. Well, that's what pisses off the public, when there's no justice, no accountability. And it's people like Tex that will get more gun control laws passed, because if he doesn't get charged with anything, people are going to say, well, so you can just shoot your wife and kill her and la-di-da, it's okay, it was an accident?
Yeah, and then there's the concern that this gives other people a means to take out their spouse, right? Because now, oh, I accidentally fired my gun and now my wife is dead. Obviously, if you're mishandling your weapon like this, we already talked about the numbers. There are even firearm instructors who mishandle their weapons, but this is someone just driving in a vehicle. I just don't really get the sense that he needed his gun out in his hand the way he had it. And as we know, something terrible happened because of his actions. So the way I look at it is, this guy doesn't need to have any guns. And I'm not sure why he would even want any after this, because his inability to properly handle a firearm cost him his wife and probably his life.
I understand that it's real easy to pull a trigger on accident, but there was a 67-year-old man in Orange County who was having a argument with his wife over what to watch on TV. And the guy pulled out his gun and shot the TV. And he was charged with a felony vandalism charge. Now, he didn't accidentally shoot the TV. He meant to do it. There was a 51-year-old man who was charged with a misdemeanor for accidentally firing his gun while he was in a Secretary of State office. He shot into the floor as he was adjusting his pants. Now, who knows if guns are even allowed in the building, but he could have killed somebody. Luckily, the bullet lodged into the floor. There was a Florida man who killed his pregnant girlfriend while spinning his loaded gun around on his finger, and it went off and shot her in the head. The Florida prosecutors decided not to press charges against him. So shooting your television will get you in more trouble than killing your pregnant girlfriend. And here we have Tex, who's killed his wife. Also, when it comes to all of his actions, whether it be calling his friend to try to get a judge's signature to get him out of jail, or his asking Danny Joe to stop speaking to investigators, none of those things really cry guilt to me. They make him look like a jerk or an a-hole, but they don't cry, I killed my wife. If they pull out emails, or if they find that he was having this whole other secret life, possibly I could find motive there for him to do this. But at this point, all I see is a guy that is really out of touch with reality, really out of touch with people in society, and he just really makes himself look bad.
Yeah, the real question will be, is he going to sabotage his own trial?
It's very possible. I think it's just being a gun owner myself that I understand how he thinks in a way. I can not even appreciate it, but I can put myself in his shoes. I see a lot of the culture out there just being, you got to be on guard. You got to be out there first. You got to defend yourself. But there is gun safety, and you never point the gun at anybody unless you're intending to use it. You don't fall asleep with your gun, things like that that he's not doing. So I would expect, just on a safety level, that people would take a lot of issue with his behavior, especially when it comes to guns. But knowing that there are negligent discharges, knowing that people can have a moment of complete stupidity and pull that trigger when they didn't mean to, that's where I fall on this, because I personally haven't had a negligent discharge. So I guess I'm still up for having one, and I hope that never happens. But I know that is possible. I think that he's deflecting a little bit with saying he was asleep when this happened, because I don't believe that for one second.
I think one of the aspects of this case that will really upset people, aside from his apparent racism, is the fact that he really got upset with Danny Joe and was trying to manipulate her into not talking to investigators. That just screams guilt all day long. So even though you can look through the case, and at least from our point of view, it really seems like an accidental shooting because of the randomness of how he ended up in that position in the first place, he just, it comes across as this terrible person. That's his own doing. He made the decision to start telling people what to say and trying to use his connections to get out, to lie whenever his gun was in play, whether it was in 1990 or in 2016. And if you have someone lying about things like this, especially if he told her the driver of the vehicle that he was in, that she needs to say she wasn't even there, I don't know what he expects. I think he can't see beyond his own nose. And I think that might cost him. I think he's going to lose a lot of support. And if he's dealing with a jury of common folks, they may not be able to connect with him because he's this very affluent man who lives in his own little world. And that's going to make it very difficult for them to have any sympathy whatsoever. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.